This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 121. It is the 21st of February, and it's been a very mixed and complex week for one of our co-hosts. Hello, Henry. How are you? And hello, Phil Oakley. Welcome back. But first, I've got to go to Henry. He's going to briefly tell us about the chaos of his week. Then we're going to get to Phil. He's going to be short and sweet, but it's been manic. Henry, tell folks what you've been doing, mate.
Well, at the moment, I am halfway through a house clearance. I say halfway. I'm 95% through a house clearance, but I've been backwards and forwards to a unit. I've had pianos going in and fridges coming out and sofas falling down the stairs, mainly on me. So I'm currently propped up against a mattress. But I promised Peter I would be here. I will not let the audience down. So you've got the pleasure of my company this evening, ladies and gents. I hope you enjoy it.
Brilliant. Great to have you, mate. Great to have you. And our second co-host we've got is Phil Oakley. Phil, welcome back, mate. You've had some fantastic feedback for your surprise appearance. People talking about a transfer coup that we'd committed in January, getting you onto the show. Now, I've got a few bits of feedback to share here with you in a second, but welcome back, mate. How are things with you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, good. Keeping busy.
Good man. I'm going to read this firstly out. This is from our good friend Phil Sloan, at Sloan_Phil. It says, he's basically saying, great listen and a real coup to have recruited Phil Oakley as a co-host, and your continued support is much appreciated. Phil, they love you out there, mate. Lots of great feedback, mate, right here from you. I think the best one I saw here was it Roger? I think it was Roger. Roger Green, our good friend. And he's obviously, I'm not sure if I told you about this one, but I'll read this verbatim. Twin Peaks played a blinder in the January transfer window and unveiled Phil Oakley, no less, as a new signing for the pod. It's like getting Messi on a free. Or more appropriately, Alex Sabal. I think he thinks you know who that is.
Alex Sabella.
Yeah, Alex Sabella. A fantastic pod and great to see Phil joining the guys. Plus he's a blade. Cross. Swords cross. So, yeah, everyone's pleased to see you, mate.
Thank you,
right.
Roger.
Gents. Thank you all, ladies and gents, for your feedback. Smashed a few new numbers and records for the pod regarding Phil's appearance. Let's smash them again. If you enjoyed the last podcast and you haven't retweeted that one, please retweet and share this particular podcast with your followers across social media, and let's break some new numbers and records again going forward for the three of us, and let's just make some new metrics. Right, I'm going to quickly talk about the markets, and then Phil's going to lay into what he's got to talk about, followed by Henry. Markets are getting very jittery. They've done quite well over the past 2 weeks, and then yesterday and today we're going because they're concerned about what's going on in America regarding tech stocks and whether they've got overbought, overvalued, frothy, etc. Everyone's hanging on the margins and on the fence, I think, at the minute with regards to tonight's data coming out from Nvidia. As I looked before I came on here, Nvidia shares are down 3%. The data doesn't come out until after hours. They're the most popular share at the minute globally. And it's going to go up or down from what most people are saying, plus or minus 11% potentially on its data coming out later. And worst of the worst, Jim Cramer has said, don't worry, folks, this company's got lots more to come. Nobody wants to hear Jim Cramer saying, we're fine. You know, it's like having him leaving the Titanic on its first journey. So let's all pray for Nvidia after hours. Right. So FTSE 100 closed down 0.73% at 7,662. FTSE All Share was down 0.61% at 4,180. FTSE AIM All Share was down 0.4% at 750. So all down today, the UK markets, bar the FTSE 250, which just edged out with 9 points rise of 0.05%. So that was the only indices we had today that was up. Why are the American markets nervous? Because the AI stocks have been up on an absolute rampage for the last year and a bit. And year to date, they've been on a rampage as well. Lots of other people have wanted to buy in and get on the bandwagon and been chasing it. And yesterday, Palo Alto Networks, ticker symbol PANW, missed. It's an AI cybersecurity company. And today, the shares are down 26%. No room for for any errors or margins here. You either you exceed, come up with profits, or you get smashed. And that's what's going to be happening across the board, I think, going forward for a lot of the tech stocks. But Phil, you wanted to start talking about these tech stocks and what you thought about your thoughts about the markets and potentially what's going on regarding the UK and European markets as well.
Well, I think you know the UK and the European markets are struggling. I think the European market in the first, where are we, what, 6-7 weeks of the year now? I think Europe's marginally up, and most of the main UK indices are marginally down. And the American markets have been incredibly strong, as has the Japanese market, actually. The Japanese market just keeps on moving up. Indian market as well is another one that's been quite wrong. I think the strongest performance I've seen, which I know nothing about, is Turkey. Turkey is the latest hot market, apparently. If you just look at the performance of the Turkish market, that is one of the strongest markets out there at the moment. But I think what it really comes down to is that America, corporate America, is still a lot healthier than UK and Europe. And yes, you can bang on about, you know, the market, the US market looks expensive, certain shares look a bit overbought. But if you actually look at the market in aggregate, the expectations are for very strong corporate profit growth. I think the last estimate that I saw was for sort of 10-11% earnings growth for the S&P 500. And I think if you look at the sort of big caps in the UK, we'll be lucky to get sort of 3-4% growth. And, you know, when it comes down to making money off shares, it largely boils down to growth. Investors like growth, and growth is what tends to make investors better off over the long run. The caveat to that is whether that growth is priced in. And there's a lot of people who you know, make pretty reasonable arguments for saying that, you know, the US market's on, I think, 20-21 times forward earnings or next year's forecast earnings. I think you've got to say it's probably right to say that a lot of growth is factored in. But I think what's interesting is how the market seems to be fixated on the American market. And, you know, the American market is so important to any investor. You know, even if you're a UK investor, what happens in America will affect what happens over here. It's as simple as that. And there are two obsessions now. There's the direction of interest rates, when the Federal Reserve will cut interest rates and by how many times it will do it this year. And I think the general consensus now is that they're not going to cut interest rates by as much and as often as people were perhaps thinking a few weeks ago, which is not great for the stock market in general. And the other thing is AI and Nvidia in particular. And it's interesting, I know you've got your views on Nvidia, Pete, that we've talked about privately. Nvidia is not a company I actually worry about when it comes to AI, because I think AI is here companies are investing in AI, and one of the things they're going to need to do is pretty much buy chips from NVIDIA. So I think if companies spend money on AI, NVIDIA is going to get a large chunk of that money. I think the wider issue with AI is whether the companies that are spending the money on it are actually going to get it to work for them in terms of either running their businesses better, more profitably, and getting more growth. And I think that's the big unknown. But I think what's going on with NVIDIA now is that it's gone up so much. I think before we came on, I think it's up 37% year to date. I think people have been scared not to own NVIDIA. I think you've probably had a lot of US fund managers who have been either not owning it or not owning a lot of it, and have probably been underperforming the S&P 500 as a result. And quite often, the way that fund management works is it's very herd-like. So it's better to fail if you're owning NVIDIA than to fail if you don't own NVIDIA, if you see what I mean. If you remember going back sort of 20 years, a lot of the fund managers who didn't own the tech stocks massively underperformed, and you know, a few of them lost their jobs. I'm not saying we're quite back to those levels yet, but what you're seeing here is a herd, like a crowded herd like trade in NVIDIA. And I think people are worried that if NVIDIA comes out and doesn't say that the future is going to be as rosy or even more rosy, then the market itself will sell off.
That's a very good call, Phil. I think I've noticed as well that you touched on their US fund managers. It's also UK fund managers and boutique houses that have been buying NVIDIA year to date as well, because of the fear of missing out. They want to be seen to be attached to the winners of this particular quarter, never mind the next year or so, or the next 3 years from now. And they've sold out of the lower valued companies that weren't doing as well. What you've said there about the companies having to buy NVIDIA chips, that is the case at the moment. But I think we were touching on the fact that there's a certain individual and company, SoftBank, looking to put together 100 billion to create a competitor. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm not sure how many people are going to back you to the tune of 100 billion to start a competitor. But there's always this case where you've got to look out for, I think it was Jamie that I interviewed, Catherwood, for the Investing Matters. And he said, you've got to look out for the imitators. There's other people that are going to look at NVIDIA, how fast it's grown over the past 10 years, and look at it and think, we could probably do a good job as them, throw money at it. But it's about the fact that they've got that particular standpoint now as the go-to best-in-class chip. Anybody that comes to try and rival that needs to get that branding, needs to get that growth, and needs to be tested as to whether or not they can deliver that particular chip. 100 billion may not suffice to do that. It may or may not. But in a current situation where we've got the markets where everybody's looking at spend, infrastructure spend, haven't got that much to spend, I'm not sure how many people are going to back SoftBank and Co. to the tune of 100 billion. What are your thoughts?
I think there's a growing desire out there now for companies that are going to invest in AI to have some more choice in who they actually buy their chips from. I think that when you buy in anything, you want a bit of choice so that you can have a bit of price competition. I think the one name that keeps coming up as a potentially strong competitor to NVIDIA is AMD, Advanced Micro Devices.
Yep.
They have got some good plans in place, some good projects in place, and in fact their earnings growth, or its earnings growth, is going to be pretty much as strong as NVIDIA's. If you look at the forecasts out there, It's like anything, Pete. You know, it's like a golden sort of rule of economics. When people and companies see companies doing well, they think, well, how can I try and get a slice of that?
Absolutely spot on. And any thoughts on that, mate? NVIDIA space, AI space? Are you watching it and going, yeah, I can see the froth coming off the top of that? Or are you thinking, you know, I'm not being caught up in that fear of missing out?
No, I think Phil is absolutely spot on there. If the money's going to go anywhere, it's going to go to NVIDIA. They are the market leaders in these microchips, and they are doing some incredibly clever stuff with the technology. I think for me, the bigger concern, like you say, is not holding it and therefore underperforming the S&P 500. I don't really, although I'm giving research ideas on the show that are over in America, I don't really buy individual companies in America. I find it far easier to just buy the S&P 500. It's a great index. It performs really strongly. And like you say, you buy 499 companies, miss out NVIDIA, and you've underperformed. And you're not going to have 499 companies. So odds are you're going to miss these really high-flying, high-performing businesses. Microsoft, when it goes on a tear. NVIDIA that comes out of nowhere. Tesla that suddenly doubles in a year. You know, they don't necessarily follow any logical reason at the time either. Some of them are acting almost like trading chips. You've got a lot of retail investors that are piling in and out of the names based on headlines and pricing them beyond all reason. But that's part of the fun of investing. You know, you're playing the market and other investors as much as you are looking at the basic economics.
Absolutely. I think Phil touched on it. We were having a private conversation about it being potentially the largest trading company at the moment, or traded company at the moment, and NVIDIA. And I see option traders all over it now. They're looking at every single possibility to play NVIDIA on a daily basis. You've got a near $3 trillion company that's being traded like it's, you know, a penny stock. It's just, yep. It's just maddening. Anyway, Phil, where do you want to go? Do you want to start with your first stock? And let's get into it.
Yeah. So
where are you going to start, mate?
So I'm going to start with a company that I think a lot of listeners will know, or even been a customer of over the years, and it is Whitbread. And Whitbread, for those of you who don't know, the ticker is WTB, and it is the owner of the Premier Inn budget hotel brand. This has been a phenomenal success story. Obviously suffered hugely during COVID when everybody was at home, but they've recovered incredibly strongly and carry on with what they've been doing really for the last 15-20 years, and that is offering great value to customers, great service, and taking market share away from older, more established, quite tired, sort of independent three-star hotels, which can't afford to compete, of arguably trying to do too much, and are getting left by the wayside. They can't afford to upgrade and keep their hotels looking nice. And they just have a really, really good connection with the customer. They control their brand really well. So you're not going on something like booking.com or any other travel website and booking a Premier Inn. Not in this country anyway. You can in Germany, but not in this country. Everything is done through Premier Inn website. And they still got a lot of space to grow. I think they got about between 80,000 and 85,000 hotel rooms in the UK. And they're looking to get to 125,000. So that's nearly pretty much 50% growth in rooms. They've got a nice business model where you stick a pub restaurant on the side where you can go and have your breakfast, go and have your evening meal. You're not paying for things like spas and gyms that you might not use. You're just getting a decent room, decent bed, shower, TV to watch, and just does what you need it to do. And it's in, they sell at good prices, so much so that they are winning a lot of business customers, or continue to win a lot of business customers. And the returns that they're getting on these hotels now are going up because they're keeping them full. They're pitching their prices at the right level so that they get their occupancy rate up. And the profits that are coming through are making decent returns on their assets. And that's you know, that's a very, very big tick in the box from the UK. They're then trying to do this, a similar thing in Germany, which is going to take a lot longer, but it's a lot bigger market. It's very fragmented. The German business is losing money at the moment, but it's going to stop losing money probably by the end of this year. And instead of taking away from profits, it's going to start adding to profits. And so I think there's a pretty good story here. You've got a great brand. You've got some great assets. The company has got quite a lot, still owns quite a lot of its hotels in big city centres. So it's got some asset backing. And it's got a very good strategy and a good platform for growth. And you can pick these shares up, you know, just under 16 times earnings. And I just think for, you know, looking for really, really strong consumer brands, I think that that's a good price.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Thank you very much for that, Phil. Any thoughts on that one, Henry?
Yeah, I absolutely love this pick, Phil. I'm a huge Premier Inn fan. I think they are great rooms at a really great price. You know exactly what you're getting, and it's always reliably good quality. I think people that turn the nose up at Premier Inns are mad, to be honest with you, because I've never had a bad night's sleep in one. I was interested to hear you say that they own the hotels, because quite a lot of these franchise groups don't, or they lease them. And that's actually quite a good potential market. It's a good
mix, Henry.
So some are owned and some are leased.
That's right.
Gotcha.
But there's about, if you actually look at it, there's about 3.5 to sort of 4 billion pounds of like property value on the balance sheet.
Gotcha.
Which will probably be understated. So potentially, you know, I've always thought that this could be a takeover target for someone to come in. And the great example of this is Intercontinental Hotels, which
another brand alike
used to own a lot of its hotels. And what it did is it sold off the property and created a franchise business. So all the assets were owned by somebody else. Then they just ran a franchise system. Now, there's so many examples out there of how profitable franchises can be, providing you treat the franchisees fairly and allow them to make a decent bit of money. And I think the sort of cream on the cake, so to speak, for this kind of business is that that could happen. But it doesn't need to happen for it still to be a potentially good medium to long-term investment. I just think it's just another thing that underpins the value of the company.
Yeah, it's definitely a quality stock. And I've just pulled up some information here, Phil. And this is a recent sort of quote going back to the 5th of February from Jefferies analyst. And he's basically saying here, Premier Inn owner Whitbread can be a recession winner, and gives it a buy rating for the hospitality stock. The broker note highlighted Whitbread's strategic focus on expansion and optimization, which is what you were talking about, with an eye on enhancing returns and deepening its economic moat, particularly in UK and in Germany. Whitbread is a recession winner with its budget price point, industry-leading price sophistication and beneficial supply conditions, and £750 million of cash firepower. It's a lot of cash to have to do what it needs to do. And basically saying here, buy rating pitches a price target of £44. And at the time then, that was suggesting a 25% upside price rise versus its price then of 35.26. I'm not sure what the price was today. But yeah, so yeah, solid company, quality brand. My daughter loves the buffet. She goes in there and she eats like an absolute beast, like a rugby player does. Whenever we stay in the Premier Inn, she's like frothing. I'm like, you can't eat all that. And she's like, ah, well, well. Yeah, lovely, lovely little, lovely place. And like you say, now having the pub and the restaurant attached, it's a nice way to keep all the money in-house as well. So yeah, enhancing returns. Yeah, thank you for that one, Phil. Right, Henry, let's go to yours, mate. And if it's to do with removal companies, that'll be right on point, mate. What have you got?
Yeah, exactly. No, I've had enough of removal companies. No, I am. I'm going to talk about a company in the UK today. It is For Imprint. The ticker is FOUR, the number four. Yep. Now, anybody that works in marketing has probably used these guys. They are a promotional materials producer. They do printing of banners. They do promotional, you know, gifts and things for corporate events, pens, flyers, brochures, that sort of thing. Now, the business operates in two geographic regions. I know them, obviously, having operated in the UK and Ireland, but they've also got operations over in North America. And both of the markets are actually really fragmented. It turns out, if any of our listeners have ever worked in marketing and you've ever needed to get pens made, you'll go to a company and it probably just produces pens. And then if you need your flyers, you've got to go to a printer, and it's a totally different firm. And if you need a banner, you go to another firm, totally different again. And you might end up using three or four firms for all your marketing materials, and it's an absolute nightmare. Now, Four Imprint have this model where they're going around and they're buying up all these little manufacturers all over the place. So when, you know, Peter in Leicester's putting on a promotional Twin Peaks event and he wants his pens and his flyers and his banners and whatever else, he can just go to 4imprint, go onto their website and order everything. And 4imprint have then got the facilities in the local area to get everything manufactured to Peter's specifications, shipped to where he wants them, all at the click of a button. It's a bit like Amazon, but for promotional goods. Now, that might sound quite dull, but it's actually incredibly useful. Anybody that works in marketing will tell you that getting this sort of stuff produced, it's usually required at short notice. And if it's short notice, you can't do without it. You can't afford to be calling around half a dozen different firms, and you need it done to the right quality. And 4imprint have got a really great reputation for providing reliable, high quality services at a very reasonable price. You'll struggle to beat them on price. Now, in terms of their business model, they basically focus on the online element. You won't see their shops all over the place. They've got facilities, but they primarily market online to other marketers. And that's a very, very easy model to scale. It doesn't cost a lot to run, you know, a Google Ads campaign. So you can ramp that up nice and quickly and fairly cost effectively. A lot of their orders are paid in advance before anything's made. So it's not like they've got loads of unpaid invoices sitting around. Cash comes in the door early, and then the goods are manufactured and shipped out. So that means that the business is highly cash generative, really nice profit margins on it. I think it works on, let me just get the figures on SharePad a second. They've got an EBIT margin of 10% and a return on capital of nearly 90%, 87.4%. Which just goes to show how profitable this business of, you know, effectively selling promotional goods can be. Now, the shares are available on a PE of about 18. So they're not hugely cheap. But for a business with a, you know, nearly 90% return on capital, I'd say it's worth that kind of PE. They're also forecast to grow their earnings per share over the next 3 years by about 10% a year. So they've still got growth in them, plenty of profit there. They pay a little dividend, you know, 2.8%. And I think that's one that, you know, listeners might want to go and do a bit of research on. I think that could be a good one to tuck away in the portfolio.
Thank you very much for that one. Henry, it's a stock that's done really well for investors over the long term. I'm going to pull up some data for it in a minute, but I'm sure Phil has looked at them in the past because it's a quality stock. So I'm going to go to Phil first and find out what his thoughts are on it.
I think Henry did a great pitch there.
He's going to buy.
It's a business I looked at a few months ago while I was doing a writing project for one of my customers, and I really like the look of it. You know, I think the thing that Henry touched on that should get investors interested is that this is a business where you can scale your footprint really quite nicely. So you have your, I don't know whether they do the manufacturing or the printing in house or whether they outsource it, but what you can do is you can, you know, the more business you get, the more volume you get, you can scale the business over, like, you know, a fixed cost platform, and that can drive your profit margins higher or your total returns. That's why your total returns are so good. This is a very, very sort of nice niche business. You're not going to find many similar businesses like this on the stock exchange. I think it's a really good company.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Agreed. There you go. You got a winner there, mate. Well done. I've just pulled up the data here, and this is going to shock a few people, I think, because I always have a look at how companies have done on a long-term basis and what their total returns have been annualized when I'm looking for quality companies. And for Imprint, ticker symbol FOUR, 10-year annualized returns, 24.2. 5-year annualized, 25.25, sorry. 3-year annualized, 35.55. So that's bells and whistles there. You know, that's just smashing it out of the park. And once again, it's one of them stocks I don't hear a lot of people talking about across the markets. It's not one of them that's got loads of the cult of four imprints. I've not heard of that being said regarding that particular stock, Henry. So very, very well done with that one. And year to date, it's doing pretty well as well. Yeah. Yeah, so well done with that one, mate. I do like that one.
Thank you very much.
Looks to me like the next event is finals on the 13th of March. So individuals that are listening to this podcast have got a little while to research it, have a look, have a think about it ahead of its results going forward. But yeah, really, really good. And a little bit of a divvies there as well, Henry. So it's done really well for the holders over the past 10 years or more. So yeah, one of our UK winners, mate. So very well done. Where is it? Is it a FTSE 250 or a FTSE 100, Henry?
I think it's a FTSE 250.
Right. So yeah, so that's in the...
Got a market cap of 1.5 billion.
1.57. So yeah, FTSE 250 company. That's where all the... I'm going to be speaking hopefully with a fund manager from Schroders, and they call that the Heineken Index, I think. Because it refreshes the parts, other parts of the markets don't reach, or something like that. So yeah, so that's really good. So that's two good companies we've got. I'm going to pick a dud now, right? I'm going to go the opposite end of the scale because I like to just shake things up a little bit. And I was going to talk about this company last time, and we ran out of time, so I saved it. And this is a company that most people would have heard of for a variety of different reasons. And it's on the Deutsche Börse, German market. And it is a sneakers company, fashion company. They're involved in all things sports and other stuff as well. And it's called Puma. And Puma have had, probably about the last 5 years, real difficulty getting out of their own way. And the shares are currently sitting at multi-year lows. On the Deutsche Börse, the ticker symbol is PUM. And the 52-week range is 36 euros to 65 euros. And it's sitting at 41 euros at the minute. Market cap of 6.29 billion, PE of 16.9. And for the past 12 months, its total returns are down 28%. So not the quality of the previous two companies that you've heard from Henry and Phil about. It came out basically on the 24th of January and said that much to the sanguine of the whole sports community, they're basically saying earnings this year are going to be weaker than expected. And they cited none other than the Argentine peso because they were trying to get into the South American market. And that's where a lot of their stuff apparently gets manufactured as well, allegedly. I'm sure they're going to tell you that, other people, that most of the stuff gets made in Germany. So they lowered their earnings schedule, what they're going to make, etc. Market spanked them, and they're down, and they keep going down. They're basically going to be coming out with an update on the 27th of February, which is just another week away from here now. And I'm not expecting any improvements whatsoever on that data. So you're all listening now, all 3,000 plus of you, and going, well, why are you telling us about this stock then? Why would we? What's the point? Right. Okay. I'm going to get to that, ladies and gents. We have got, sorry, not we, the Football Federation, global football sports interest individuals. We have got the Euros. We've got some Sheffield fans in here. They're going to want to see some clubs winning and playing some winning games. So they might watch the Euros. Phil, sorry, I had to get that in there, mate. And Roger's thinking, don't pick on Sheffield. Right, so the Euros are coming out in June, July of this year. It's held in Germany, right? Some of the countries playing are going to be wearing Puma kit, gear, football stuff, and also the rest of it. So for me, that's going to be the first possible catalyst, or one of the first possible catalysts, for Puma sportswear, full stop. Yeah, for them to stop this drift, and decline. Hopefully the Argentine peso doesn't fall any further down, and hyperinflation doesn't eradicate further profitability for Puma. Second catalyst for me, and this hopefully they've sorted themselves out between then, is all the way out to 2026, right? So I'm thinking long-term on this one, ladies and gents. What happens in 2026, I hear you ask? The World Cup happens in 2026. Where is it being held? Canada, United States, and Mexico, across the whole of Americas. Another opportunity for Puma to get in front of all of those people, all the sports gear, and so on and so forth, and sell a wad of stuff across all markets globally. So that is why I am talking about Puma. Right now, it's a dud. Right now, it's sitting at multi-year lows. But I'm always interested more so when a quality brand name is sitting near its multi-year lows than sitting at its 10-year, 15-year highs. Are the shares going to go lower between now and 2026? Potentially. Between now and June 2024? Potentially. But I believe at some point or other, Puma as a company will get its act together and be worth far more than $6 billion going forward, which is possibly about the same value, excuse me, as JD Sports brand and the retailer JD. So I'm looking for them potentially to reinvigorate their revenue stream and get their act together. And that's why I picked it. Unloved, off the radar, not popping and rocking the revenue streams and profitability, actually declining as we speak. But that's when they get interesting to me. Henry, First thoughts on that one?
I had no idea that they were providing the kit. That's a really interesting potential catalyst.
They provide some of the kit for some of the teams.
Yeah.
And some of the football players will be wearing Puma footwear. They don't provide all the kit for all of these events. No, they don't do that.
No, but you know what I'm saying. I wasn't aware that they provided it. First off, as a brand, it's one to me that feels really dated. I feel like Puma was something that people my age wore in the 90s when we were at school, and now, you know, well, I won't be seen in it. I'll put it that way.
Fair enough, mate. Fair enough.
Please don't
Phil,
write
any
in with your
thoughts?
Hate mail.
No. This is what it's about, mate. You don't have to agree. And I'm sure Phil's not. Phil, what are your thoughts? Puma.
I think I'll struggle with this one. I think that if you look at all, I mean, one of the really big themes, you know, over the last few years is like, you know, is this trend of athleisure.
Athleisure, yeah, absolutely.
People wearing sports brands as everyday fashion. And it's a very crowded market. And I think the thing that's concerning at the moment is that all the companies that are involved in it, you know, the Nikes, the Adidas, Puma, and then you look at JD Sports here in this country, I mean, they're really struggling.
All of them are, absolutely.
I think it's like, you walk into JD Sports, which, you know, I don't do too often, but I have done on occasion, dragged by my teenage kids. And I just wince at the prices. I think the prices of this kit, of all this trainers and clothes, it's eye-wateringly expensive. And I just think that there's lots of parts of the world where the consumer is, you know, actually quite stretched.
Absolutely.
And they're not buying this kit, or they're not buying as much of it. And you know, I look at the valuation of Puma. They're not on a cheap multiple, but that's probably because the profits are depressed. Yeah, and so the cheap multiple is a function of the low profitability at the moment. And
at the moment, yes.
You know, you'd never say never. You know, there is a brand here. It's just a question of whether it can start punching its weight again against some very, very tough competition. It would be, I think it's a very brave to buy it now. But what you can say is that, you know, there is expectations of profit recovery baked into the shares, I think. But if I just take away all the numbers and just look at the overall sort of business environment, it would be tough for me to get to really warm to that one, Pete. I'm sorry.
No, it's absolutely fine, mate. It's not one I'm expecting people to warm to. I'm expecting them to go out, research it, put it on the watch list and watch it until the catalyst start. You know, I think it was just last week, Nike came out, and prior to that, Adidas came out. They're all cutting their workforce for a reason. That's another thing to look out for. Are the companies in that sector cutting the workforce? Hell yeah. So Nike came out and they're cutting their workforce by a total of 2%, or more than 1,600 jobs. So, you know, Nike is meant to be the number one sportswear company. And if they're struggling and cutting numbers, then what does it say for the rest of the sector? So, yeah, it's one of them. I'm looking beyond this year and next for them to sort themselves out. It could and probably will get cheaper come February the 22nd when they come out with their update to the market, and I'll be watching it. And if I do dip my toes in, be one of them, where I'll probably do some pound cost averaging, where I'll go in and keep buying another tranche incrementally until I get the weighting that I want, and then I'll just leave it there and forget about it, you know.
Just one thought that sort of crosses your mind is that if you dig into the history of Puma, it actually is a relation of a long past relative of Adidas. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes,
is it the Dazzler brothers?
Yes, absolutely. Two brothers fell out and they went their separate ways, formed Adidas and Puma. It wasn't originally called Adidas, but yeah, spot on.
I suppose the thing that crosses your mind with this is that, you know, it is a recognizable brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unlike a retailer like JD Sports, which doesn't really control, you know, its brand, it's a middleman or an agent.
Mm-hmm.
You just wonder whether someone might come and actually buy this brand and try and turn it around. So that would be the positive side of it.
Yeah, that could be a faster catalyst probably than the turnaround. And equally, like as you say, it's a German, or was a German behemoth brand, and Adidas is so far gone past where Puma was X amount of years ago when you know, when Henry was wearing Puma sneakers. And you know, there could be a case of, you know, would the German government try and force Adidas's hand to say, look, just subsume them and put it all in under the one umbrella again? Who knows? I'm pushing the envelope there now. I don't own the stock, ladies and gents, so it's not me pushing it down people's throat. I'm not saying go out and buy it. I'm saying it's a research idea, as I always do. I'm going to try and speak about another company in a minute, which is probably more in tune with what people are looking at now, where people are buying the stock at its high. I'll be talking about that one a bit later on. But Henry, we're going to take a break here now. Do you want to say anything about your fantastic, quickly, about the fantastic fundraiser you're doing for Centrepoint at all? Or do you want to leave that?
I do. Very, very quickly. There was somebody that donated straight after we broadcast the last podcast, within 10 minutes of us coming off the air. And I was really, really moved. Someone called Barney. I don't know them. Yep. I apologize if I've met you, Barney, but I've not met you. £200 plus £50 gift aid. Love the podcast. It's always an interesting and easy listen. Henry and Peter are top guys, and the spirit of kindness that comes from both of them is great. Keep up the good work. I'll tell you what, Barney. Fantastic. You know what? Spirit of kindness, you've got it there 100%, mate. So thank you very much from all three of us, because that's wonderful. We've also had £20 from the Quality Small Cap Investor. Great work, chaps. And hearing Phil back on the podcast is fantastic. I miss the Investors Chronicle podcast days. TPI 120 had a great balance, and I'm looking forward to more of the same. And we've had another donation from our pal Scrumpy. £10
plus £2 50 gift aid. Good guy.
So thank you very much. Thank you very much to all three of you. It honestly, every time I get a little ping in my inbox because I get a notification, it puts a massive smile on my face. So you're doing a wonderful thing here. Thank you very much. We are now up to, I'll just give the audience the total, 22%, £1,130 we've raised so far.
Fantastic. Thank you, Scrumpy. Thank you, Jason. And thank you, Barney. Thank you for that. And we just hit us with the URL for the donations, if you've got it there, please, mate, again.
Absolutely. It's www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPete'sChallenge24. That's TwinPete'sChallenge24. All donations are very gratefully received.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPETES. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPETES promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Thank you all for your donations. And if you haven't donated yet, please consider doing that. We're going to try and help as many young people that are currently faced with homelessness around the country via the Centrepoint charity. Thank you, Henry, for that. We're going to go to Phil. Do you want to give us your second stop, please, sir? Then we go back to Henry.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It's another UK stop, one that's well known. And I've chosen this because I think it sort of highlights what's kind of been going on in the markets, where, you know, a lot of the market, the gains in the market have become very sort of, certainly the US market, have been very narrow. You know, they've been focused on a few companies, and that's left other companies, other sectors, other markets even, you know, our UK market, arguably, to be sort of, you know, cast aside almost. And this is a company that I get the impression that investors are starting to warm to this company now. And it's a company that's been struggling for a long time. And it is GlaxoSmithKline, or GSK, you know, a pharmaceutical giant. And like a lot of the big pharmaceutical companies, they are facing up to the fact that a lot of the drugs that they've made money from are losing their exclusivity over the coming few years. It's what they call in the trade as the patent cliff. So you get a drug, you get, I don't know, I think, is it 17 years a patent lasts or something? And if no one comes along and competes with you, you can make a lot of money from it. And then that period of exclusivity ends, and then you can get companies are free to compete with you with what's known as generic drugs, and your revenues and profits go down. And this has been a worry, not just for investors in Glaxo, but, you know, really across the whole global pharmaceutical sector, with the exception of Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, who have been into this, the weight loss thing.
Obesity drug, yeah. They'll be smashing it. Yeah,
they're absolutely smashing it. And, you know, they have price tags to match. And the rest of the sector is, you know, cast aside almost. And I just think in the last few weeks and months, I detect there's a bit, you look at the news flow that's coming out of Glaxo. One of the big negatives against it is, years ago, it used to have a heartburn drug called Zantac. And there's been a lot of legal cases against it, particularly in America, saying that Zantac has caused cancer. And there's been a lot of litigation. And that litigation is gradually being sorted out there. The company are making financial settlements. And it looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel here, and they can get this done without it costing them huge amounts of money. But the really good news is that they seem to be gaining some traction with their drug portfolio. They've got quite a sort of decent pipeline that's going to come online over the next 2 to 3 years, which has quite a lot of potential. But you're already seeing things like, you know, they have drugs called Arexvy, which is a respiratory drug. Or they've got like a vaccine business, particularly one against shingles, which is making, you know, good money now. But then you've got new drugs coming on against things like blood cancer, hepatitis. You've got a very big and established and with further potential in things like HIV care. And the earnings forecasts of Glaxo are moving in the right direction. And, you know, this is a company that is probably going to do sort of, depending on the currency, sort of 8-9% earnings growth over the next few years, with revenue growth a little bit less than that. But, you know, you want, this is what you want to see. You want to see revenue growth, not just earnings growth, because you can grow your earnings through cutting costs. But the good thing about Glaxo is that, or GSK as it's called now, is that the revenue starting to come through, and that's coming through to profits. And the valuation of these shares is that it's about 10 and a half times the next 12 months forecast earnings per share. And that is one of the lowest valuations. If you look at all the valuations of the big global pharmaceutical company, it's one of the lowest ones out there. But actually, it's got some decent earnings growth coming through. And this could be a bit of a slow burn, but I see this as a company that has the potential to sort of re-rate, get a higher valuation. And if more good news is coming through from the drug pipeline, again, like you know, one of the things that you look for, Pete, is you look for companies that are unloved, the expectations are not really there. You've got 10 times earnings. You're not really factoring in much in the way of future profits growth. And it seems to me that that's not the case here. So I'll just throw that one into the ring as another one to look at.
Yeah, I held GSK for a little while. When I looked at them last time, I think it was nearer to probably about 12 and a half quid, maybe £13. And I did some of parts at the time where I thought they were worth about 20 quid a couple of years back, and I held them. And then they announced the spin-off of Haleon, and I thought that was going to be the catalyst for it. But the way they configured it, it didn't work out as I planned it would. So I didn't get my sum of the parts equation. And then I just thought, this isn't working out. So I sold them, sold out of them, and I don't currently hold them. And there's been quite a bit of noise and considerations, should I say, not noise, considerations regarding GSK. Because I look back at AstraZeneca in 2018, and their pipeline was in a similar situation to where GSK's was last year. Nobody wanted AstraZeneca then, when it was nearer to £53, £55. It's now, last year it hit 120. So I agree with you regarding the potential of their pipeline getting the catalyst that it's going to be getting over the next few years that will drive the price higher. But I've just pulled up a tweet here, and you've already answered this question. My concerns still remain, Phil, about the Zantac legal stuff. And it was Paul Hawkins, an investor on Twitter. He's mainly in bonds, but he does buy the odd individual stocks. And he was basically, I think he was buying GSK, or getting very keen on GSK because of the lowly valuation of GSK. And some other individuals that I know already own GSK as well, and they're quite positive on it. I'm still not gone back into GSK, and I wrote this back to Paul and another listener called Andrew at the time, and this is going back on the 14th of Feb. GSK's ongoing Zantac legal issues won't conclude soon, because the consideration there for some of them was that potentially it's a takeover stock because it's so lowly valued, and that is a very big possibility actually. But I said, me being, my daughter thinks I'm a pun guy, the Zantac issue is a takeover poison pill. That was my joke. Some cases are being closed without disclosure of payments. Deeper research shows the scale of GSK's Zantac legacy issue. My hope is that it does not become the Monsanto / Bayer Roundup size issue. So that's my only thing stopping me from buying. If it had dealt with all of the Zantac stuff, I would be buying. I would have bought it already, Phil, at 14 and a half, maybe 15, 16 quid. The potential pipeline now, if it does a similar sort of thing to where AstraZeneca was in 2018, will take the stock from 16 to 20 plus pounds easily, and you're still getting the dividend, which I think will increase it as their profitability goes ahead as well. So you're looking at a good, you know, you say you go from, you know, 7% or 10% per year, could easily give you 15% compounded over the next 2, 3, or 4 years. And that's, you know, what do you want for a blue chip company? That's what you want. You don't want the volatility. You just want it to just steadily just keep going despite whatever's going on macro wise. But that's the only thing stopping me at the minute, as to get all that out of the way. It's not going to be out of the way very soon. If it falls back to 14 quid, I'll probably take a little nibble. Henry?
Yeah, I really like GSK. I've got a friend of mine that's building a portfolio and occasionally bounces ideas off me. And we were talking about GSK a couple of years ago. And I, you know, I don't give financial advice. So I expressed an opinion that I thought it was a good one to add to their portfolio if they were looking for a defensive type business, and they did. And they're doing okay with it, to be perfectly honest. The dividends roll in. The shares are slowly ticking along. The Zantac issue, yeah, fine. But to me, I've put that in the basket of it's a big multinational. There are these things that are going to crop up. And I don't think most investors have got a grip of it well enough to know whether that could tank the company or not. I don't think it could, from my understanding of it. And I, you know, I think it's just one of those things about owning a big pharmaceutical company. There are going to be these lawsuits from time to time. So I was a bit more bullish on that one when it came around at 14. I thought that looked very undervalued.
Agreed. I mean, going back to what Phil was saying about total returns as well, it's currently up 14.6% since the, what have we got, 31st of December 2023. So that's not done too bad, Phil. Yeah, a good start.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's others. You know, there is hope. There is hope out there, I think. These companies can come back. I mean, it's very similar actually to I've just written another article on another pharmaceutical company, which is on the Elite Companies CityWire website. It's Novartis, which is a Swiss company.
Yeah.
Again, you know, they haven't got the litigation issues, but they're another company that have been getting their drug portfolio into a better place so that it can actually contribute to some growth. So that there it's certainly definitely a place to take your fishing rod, I think.
You know,
cast a line and see what you get.
Yeah, buy some quality pharma. And this is what I remember having an interview with you, Phil, and being on the IC podcast with yourself and John Newman. And I said to you at the time, AstraZeneca was about £80, if not less than £80. And I said it was going to go to £100. And the reason why was because it was using AI to actually speed up their drug discovery stuff. And now more and more companies are using that. GSK has been a bit slow on that take up, but it's using it more and more. So the pipeline is going to accelerate over the next few years for GSK, I believe. So yeah, you're definitely onto a good start. And I'll probably end up changing my mind as soon as they drop down to 15 quid, if that ever happens. But the pipeline's going to keep coming out. Henry, what have you got, mate, as your second start?
My second one is Newmark Security. The ticker is, I've completely forgotten the ticker now. NEW, I think it is. Let me just double check that. Hold on a second. It is, I was well off there, Newmark Group. The ticket is NMRK. That's NMRK. This is a security business, basically, as the name would suggest. They're one of the UK's leading provider of top-of-the-line electronic and physical security systems. Now, interestingly, unlike a lot of security companies that basically provide a fat, untrained bloke on the door to stand there and scare people off at clubs or supermarkets or whatever,
That's again, not what they do. Don't say bouncer, that. Don't besmirch all security companies like that, mate. They're not in Nottingham.
I know. I'm going to have a large mob outside this house soon. But I mean, if they want to come and move some boxes, that would be handy. Anyway, these guys specialise in the hardware, software and services that provide really specialist protection services for things like banks and top security bioengineering facilities, that sort of thing. I mean, they also do the, you know, lock on a door type thing. But there's basically two arms of the business. One is Grosvenor Technology, who develop, manufacture and provide workplace management and access control solutions. So we're thinking key cards, biometrics, retina scans, that sort of thing. The other side of the business is SafeTown, who provide physical security solutions across the public and private sectors. And they've really adopted quite a consultative approach to clients. So the idea being, rather than, you know, some sales bloke turning up and going, yeah, we need to reinforce your windows and, you know, that should stop you getting burgled. They turn up and actually talk about how your business operates, what the site looks like, who's coming in and out, what your access needs are, that sort of thing. Now, the benefit of that is that, one, the security system is more tailored to the building and the client and their operations, but also you can sort of upsell them a little bit, because it's not like it's just we've just got a safe and a reinforced door for you. Actually, we've got alarm systems and biometric systems and reinforced bomb-proof paneling for the walls and whatever else. And they can determine what you might need and help you understand what you need that's most effective for your security. Now, the reason the business caught my eye was actually their three-year forecast earnings per share growth are up at 41%, which is absolutely astonishing. Now, their return on capital is not great. It's single digits. It's sort of 5, 6%. So there doesn't appear to be a huge amount of margin in what they're doing. But that earnings per share growth really, really caught my eye. And listeners are going to have to go away and do a little bit of research into what's causing that forecast earnings per share growth to be so astronomical. But to me, a business that's forecasting compound growth at 40%, you know, even if the share price only reflected half of that growth, you'd be onto a heck of an investment there. So I think that's one that our listeners might want to go away and do a bit of research on.
Thank you for that. I'm just going to do a correction here for you, Henry. The ticker symbol is NWT on AIM for Newmark Security. But what you were saying about the actual revenue growth and the margins, it's absolutely on a tear at the moment. I think primarily because they're getting into services with clients in the US. And if that continues to accelerate, then they're going to be absolutely growing significantly going forward. And there's talk here about five pillars of growth from their Grosvenor operation. Looks like a key component of their growth going forward. And getting involved in the tech and software space as well. You know, you've got big data centers, you've got millionaires and billionaires working on a particular campus, doing lots of work, creating NVIDIA chips for Phil's companies and so on and so forth. They wouldn't want protecting, aren't they? They're going to want to protect their IT and their individuals as well. So, yeah, I like that. And I like the fact he's a tiddler as well. So there's lots of room for growth. And I feel pretty certain they're not just gruff guys that make Phil look small with luminous jackets on. So
yeah, if anybody works for Newmark, if anybody works for Newmark, please don't track me down and throw me in a canal. I'm very sorry.
They're probably far more covert, mate. You probably wouldn't even know they're there.
Exactly.
Okay, Phil. Any thoughts on Newmark Security, fella? I know it's a tiddler and a little bit outside your playing wheel.
It is. I don't think I should say anything.
Right. You know what? Bill's not saying anything because he works for them, folks. That's what he's staying up, isn't it? But only when he goes to Sheffield.
I think the sheer size of this just put me off. I just think it's like I would just feel really nervous buying a share with an 8 million market cap. I really would. It's one of those things that you'd never be able to get out of if it went wrong. And that's why I don't sort of look at this area of the market. I think just to clarify, Henry, I think I've sold you a pup. I think I've given you the wrong data for Newmark. I think I've confused it with Newmark Group for you. So just to clarify for the readers, the earnings per share growth is not 41%. There aren't any forecasts for it. But just to let you know, I sent Henry a data sheet, and I just need to make that clear so that people don't have a go at him.
In which case, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to plead innocence on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds interesting, but it's a market. I think for me, one of the things I would look in here, the level of competition, and my guess is that you could be up against some very big players in the market, and whether that allows you to thrive on, I don't know, but the shares have been a phenomenal success. I think they've almost doubled over the last year. So clearly there are a lot of fans out there, and it's a bit with, and it's mainly a UK and US business, but it's got, it's got sales, and obviously looking to develop its sales all over the world. So it's got something. But yeah, the classic thing when you're dealing with a business of this small market cap is that yes, you could make fun. This is where you get your 10 baggers, isn't it? Your 10 baggers and your 20 baggers. But it's also, a kind of share where you would get trampled in the panic if anything goes wrong with it. Yeah, you'd just never be able to get out. But that's the same for any sort of small company. But no, I think check the competition on this one to see if it's got something that the bigger players haven't got, then someone might come and buy it. But my apologies to you, Henry, for the bad data, and apologies to the listeners. It's my fault. I got the wrong one out to you. I couldn't
no,
sit there
no,
and
no.
Take it, Henry.
No worries. We've all apologised to our listeners. They can go and do the research on that one. It is a tiddler. And if it goes well, it will multibag. If it goes badly wrong, it will get smashed. But at the moment, they're growing in America, so they'll do quite well. I'm going to talk about a very, very popular stock now. Yeah.
Very I was just going to say, I'm afraid I'm going to have to duck out here, guys.
No worries, Henry. If you've got to go, you've got to go. I realise that you've got to get gone.
Apologies to our audience, but I hope you enjoy Peter's second pick. And thanks for tuning in, as always.
Okie dokie. You go. Thank you so much, Henry. I'll speak to you tomorrow, fella.
Speak to you soon.
Take care. Right, Phil, my second stock for us today is Bloomsbury Publishing. The market cap is currently 437 million. Share price is currently £5.30. And I'm talking about this because I mentioned this stock as a research idea back in October of 2023 in the podcast 112. And I recommended Bloomsbury Publishing as a research idea. At the time, I was choosing it with a view that the catalyst would be how they did over the latter part of November and December, and it being a stock that could get boosted by their sales during Christmas and people reverting back and encouraging people to buy more books rather than just electric toys, et cetera, et cetera. So that was back in October. The shares at the time were £3.95. And the year low was in September, a month earlier, at £3, I'll get this right, 65 on the 26th of September. So mid-October, now £3.95. I put it down as a research idea. What's happened since then is that it's basically upgraded its forecasts twice in recent months. And it came out, so we go back, 13th of February, the share price was at £4.91.5 from the £3.95 I'd already tipped it out in October. 14th of February, it came out with a full year trading update and full year outlook, and basically said revenue and profit before taxation and highlighted items are now expected to be, wait for it, significantly ahead of upgraded market expectations for the year to 29th of February 2024. The board considers that the consensus market expectations for the year ending 29th of February 2024 is currently for the revenue of £291.4 million and profit before tax and highlighted incomes of £37 million. And then they went on to basically say that cash flow for the next financial year will be used to reinvest in the business, dividends, and possible acquisitions. So basically, they were saying they smashed it, they'd upgraded earlier, they're upgrading again, shares went on a tear, went from previous day of 491, opened up, climbed to an intraday high of £5.50, closed at £5.18 on the day of 14th of February. The following day, Simon Thompson comes out and writes an article about it and says, essentially, they're absolutely smashing it. And they are, in his words, looking at the company, he thinks that they are going to continue climbing, yeah? And one of the brokers is Investec, £6.20 target, right? So I'm looking at this and thinking, you know what? When I look at shares, I like it to be nearer its lows, yeah? I'm looking also at the total returns on the company, yeah? From the lows of £3.65 in 26 September to the high which it hit when after Simon Thompson tipped it at £5.44, it then sprung to £5.60. That's a 53% move in just under 4 months. That's a lot for a little retail seller of books. So looking at the 10-year returns annualized for BNY, which is the ticker symbol, 13.48%. 5-year total returns, 21.68%. 3-year returns, 26.58%. Going from £3.65 to £5.60 in less than 5 months, that's double, over double, excluding dividends, of the 26.7% for the 3-year annualized average, right? So my view is, if I bought it at £3.65 or £3.90, as I recommended people to research it out in October, I wouldn't be buying Simon Thompson's tip at £5.44 with a view to another 17% in the next year, excluding dividends. So I'm raising this as a cautionary sort of thing. Yes, it can go up another 17%, but the law of average and the risk reward here for 17% minus the risk factor of actually it's actually done 53%+ in the past 5 months. I just think it's just one maybe not to just be buying now. You know, I'm not wanting people to buy at the very, very top and it decelerates over the next couple of months into the summer before people start buying books again for holidays and then start again in October, November for the next Santa run on the stock and they do well again in January. There might be a bit of resistance getting it to £6. Is it worth buying it for 17% plus the dividends? I'm not quite sure. And that's why I've raised it as a cautionary watch and see. I would have been trimming now to basically possibly go and buy Puma, which would have lost the profits on it, on the stock, but not Puma, but you get my drift. So that's the reason why I brought it. I don't want everybody running out and buying this stock because Simon Thompson has tipped it or anybody else is buying it. And lots of people on Twitter are deciding to buy it now at £5.40, £5.45 because Simon Thompson and others are talking about it. I am just cautious on it now because it's run so fast from £3.65 to £5.60. Simon Thompson sits at £5.44. It's currently at £5.30. That's what I want it to raise, Phil. Your thoughts, sir?
That was a fair point. I think interesting. While you were talking, I opened up SharePad and had a look at the forecasts. Now
they're brilliant.
I mean, the forecasts for this year are brilliant.
Yeah.
But the forecast for the year after, or for the profits to fall off a cliff, is what I can see.
Now, actually, yes, yeah.
I mean, the thing about a business like this is that if they've got, you know, hot selling fantasy novels or whatever, that's flavor of the year. They set a very high sort of benchmark. So they have a great year, and then they've got to start again and try and do more than that the following year. And clearly if you look at analyst forecasts for the next couple of years, they're expecting a great year this year. And then they're expecting the profits to fall off a cliff and then not grow by much in the following couple of years. I think if you've got a business like this, which has got a lot of momentum, I suppose what the bulls will say of this, and I can totally understand why they would say is that those forecasts are wrong, right? And that the momentum from this year is going to carry over into next year, and those profit forecasts are going to get severely revised upwards.
Absolutely.
I get that. I totally get that thinking, and it wouldn't surprise me if that does happen. But I think that sort of kind of comes back to your point, doesn't it? In terms of, you know, the share price has moved, probably expecting that. And we'll see. I've always thought this is a really nice business, actually.
Likewise.
Probably because I like books, and you like books as well.
And, I do love my books, yes.
But it's also a business which is very hard to sort of forecast and predict, because it depends on the sort of publishing releases that you've got. But there's no doubt this is a company that does it very well. But certainly one to keep an eye on. And as I say, it wouldn't surprise me if the forecasts get severely raised up on this one. But who it's something I've not looked at for a while, so those are just my sort of, you know, initial thoughts. But it is a nice business.
It's a nice business. It's a quality company. It surprised a few people. Nobody wanted to buy it at sub £4, and now they want to buy it 30%, 40% higher now. So that's my only concern. If it goes back down to £4 for the markets, and not due to its own fault, I'd probably consider it. But I didn't want to buy it back in October, because I put it out as a research share for other people. And going forward, I'll probably be a bit more proactive in purchasing some of the research ideas that I've got for the show, and just disclose them as quick as I've purchased them. So we'll see about that. But it's a good company. That could do quite well. I just don't want people chasing it and then being hurt by the stock not actually accelerating to £6 and maybe going sub where they bought it, because the markets are difficult enough. Right, I'm conscious of the time, Phil. Is there anything you wanted to add? Because we've covered all the stocks, and Henry's already left because, you know, the mattress has fallen on his head.
No, I think I'm done. I'm done.
Right. Okie dokie. All right. Ladies and gents, thank you ever so much for listening to this podcast. This is podcast number 121 with myself, Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquers3 on Twitter. Fantastic Phil Oakley still with me here. He's going to be back again with yourselves in the next podcast. And Henry will be back, and hopefully he'll be back where he actually lives rather than the house move. And we'll be able to join you again in 2 weeks' time. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe on YouTube. Please give it a retweet. Please keep sending your feedback in for Phil, Henry and myself regarding your thoughts on this podcast. And we very much look forward to speaking to you very much in 2 weeks' time. Until then, take care, stay healthy, and show some kindness to others. Phil, bye for now, mate.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.